Welcome to 2 hours of the Chill Out Tent. I'm Josh Briscoe. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Quentin Moore is pushing the buttons on the other side of the glass. Nick Price back there, too. He's just packing up, just trying to get out of here. We're going to have a good time talking about things related to the Kansas City Football Chiefs this evening. We had a game just last night. We've certainly heard plenty already about what we saw against the Buccaneers, and there's some interesting places about where this team could go, plus a genuinely surprising vibe turn amongst a lot of Chiefs fans at one particular position. They did not make a move today on the day of the trade deadline. Ultimately, they, of course, add DeAndre Hopkins. We will discuss him this evening. Don't you even stress about that. And Joshua Uche, who didn't have a huge workload, didn't make a huge impact last night. His onboarding process is still, well, you know, onboarding. And so I'm not worrying about him one bit just yet. But before we get to the move the Chiefs didn't make and why I think we're maybe having a little bit of the wrong conversation about the cornerback position, there you go. I've spilled the beans. The tease for later is we're going to talk about the corners. Wasn't a great day against Tampa Bay. I think it's a little strange where we've ended up. But there is no question about where we should be from the top of what we saw last night on Monday Night Football. There's been a lot of talk of the three-peat throughout this entire offseason and the season to this point. And suddenly we're talking about the AAR-peat? AAR-three-peat? There's something in there with the elder statesman of the Chiefs offense being the guys who can carry it. Now, look, I'm optimistic long-term about Xavier Worthy, despite the fact that it's been a lot of ups and downs and probably a few more downs than ups to this point, although I guess yesterday we would have liked to see him get his feet down a little faster. I am impressed with how this team has weathered the injuries they have on the offensive side of the ball. Of course, Kareem Hunt being the returning elder statesman in this instance, taking the baton from Isaiah Pacheco out with the injury. The wide receiver injuries would have decimated a lesser team and a lesser quarterback and a lesser coach. All of that should be relatively evident. I think we know all of that. I give the Chiefs some credit and some wiggle room for the state of the wide receiver room at the midseason point because their number one and number two receivers were lost for essentially the year. Certainly you hope that Hollywood's back for the end of the season, maybe for the playoff run. But the offense the Chiefs were teeing up in training camp is extraordinarily different than the offense that we saw through these first eight games of the season. Nothing is more impressive. You know what? Nothing's more impressive. Something is more shocking than what DeAndre Hopkins did. I was going to say nothing is more impressive and nothing is more shocking than what DeAndre Hopkins has done. That's not entirely true. The most shocking thing that happened last night, if you would have gone back to training camp and say, all right, Josh, I'm going to, I'm going to bring out the crystal ball, put it in front of you, look in, see the future, and tell me which of these two things is more likely. That in the first game of November, DeAndre Hopkins will haul in two touchdowns in his second game as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs, or Kareem Hunt returns to Arrowhead, scores a walk-off touchdown in overtime, and blows kisses to the fans. I would have said, oh, well, that's kind of alarming that they needed to trade for DeAndre Hopkins, but that's, you know, that has been a fit that makes a little bit of sense for a while now. I could see that happening. There's no shot Kareem Hunt is going to be on this team. And now here we are, largely, I think, because of the three-peat, but also largely because the Chiefs and Clark Hunt and Andy Reid and Brett Veach and the decision-makers throughout, they know the three-peat is history. Patrick Mahomes is a limited resource. I know we don't want to, like, think about the end of the Patrick Mahomes era. I think somewhere, though, in 40 or 50 years, he may need to retire. Hopefully not sooner. But you also have a limited resource in Travis Kelce at this point, the eldest statesman in this offense. I don't know if Travis Kelce is going to retire after this year. I don't know if it's going to just be one more season. But since Travis Kelce signed that reworked two-year contract this last offseason, I've been under the assumption that that's more or less, that's a soft guidance for Travis Kelce's retirement plan. There's a lot of instances and a lot of reasons that he could call it quits after a three-peat, depending on his health, and, you know, his life seems pretty full and pretty good right now. Maybe he's absolutely dead set on finishing out that 2-year commitment. Maybe he decides, hey, you know what? I have 2 more years of this. Rashee Rice is back, and I'm feeling good. In 2025, I'll keep stretching the career out. I don't know. But I do know that we're in the, not the back nine, the back three for Travis Kelce. And so it would have been irresponsible for the Chiefs, with all of the infrastructure, the best quarterback in football, the best tight end in the world, it would have been irresponsible for them to let this season come and go because they suffered some devastating injuries early in the season. Now, in light of today being the trade deadline, I think it's really, really important. I talked about this a ton last week. I think it's really, really important to note that the Chiefs did that in responsible ways that did not come at the expense of their future. It wasn't, oh God, Rashee Rice went down. Whatever it takes for T. Higgins. Or frankly, whatever it takes for Davante Adams. They got DeAndre Hopkins for the same price the Pittsburgh Steelers just gave up for Mike Williams. I thought Mike Williams was probably going to end up getting cut. Now, for Hopkins, it could escalate to a fourth if he stays healthy and if the Chiefs go back to the Super Bowl. And I will say, with grand confidence, the Steelers would have thrown those clauses in too for Mike Williams. Hey, Pittsburgh, if Mike Williams plays the vast majority of your offensive snaps and you guys go to the Super Bowl, can you make that a fifth or fourth? I'm asking the Steelers to do that, even as one of the top teams in the AFC right now, probably would have felt foolish from the Jets. The point being, the Chiefs reloaded. They did it responsibly. They didn't overpay. They did not give up the house for Marshawn Lattimore today at corner. Again, we'll talk more corner later on. But now they have something that they certainly didn't plan on having this offseason. And it's veteran help for Travis Kelce. Instead of lightening the load on the 35-year-old's shoulders and bringing in second year of Rashee Rice and really running the offense, if not entirely through him, making him sort of the primary thing to lean on in the passing game. That was the plan. We saw it. Having Hollywood Brown take a little bit more attention away from Kelce, make his life a little bit easier. Younger guy, not as young as the rookie, of course, or any of the second-year guy, but younger than Kelce. There were lots of ways they tried to spread out that weight, and it all came out from underneath them for reasons that weren't the Chiefs' fault, either in execution or in planning. Just fell out from under him. So they make this responsible acquisition for DeAndre Hopkins. And in his second game back as a Chief, his second game as a Chief, he has a performance so good that today he tweeted out a picture of Patriots Randy Moss and Patriots Tom Brady embracing each other with just an ellipses as the caption. Eight catches for 86 yards is not always an impressive stat line. Two touchdowns can come and go in fluky ways. But I saw something in that game last night from DeAndre Hopkins that I've never seen from a Chiefs receiver receiving the football from Patrick Mahomes. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, an incredible talent. An incredible wide receiver at the peak of his powers compared to where Hopkins is now. None of this is about Tyreek Hill. He is an unfathomable player. But Patrick Mahomes has never had a receiver like DeAndre Hopkins, which is understandable because as far as I can tell, there's probably one of those. There might be a couple of, you know, the big body X receivers who can be out there alone on an island, who will catch everything, can work on the short and in the intermediate. The biggest play of the game wasn't short or intermediate to DeAndre Hopkins. It was down the field. Patrick Mahomes was being enveloped by pass rushers and his own offensive line. I don't know how he got that throw off. If you see the screenshot of the moment the ball is leaving Mahomes' hands, it seems like a magic trick, as so much of what he does perpetually seems. But Patrick Mahomes gets that football out of his hands. And it wasn't just like a tremendous job tracking the football from DeAndre Hopkins, although he's good at that too. Patrick Mahomes took that football, put it back in the box that it came in, and sat it in DeAndre Hopkins' hands, which just so happened to be surrounded by four Tampa Bay Buccaneers hands with two more chasing down behind him. if you are not made a believer in this experiment from that moment, you'll never believe anything.
So I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
So I just looked up Randy Moss's stats for his first year with Tom Brady and the Patriots, and he averaged 93.3 yards per game in that first year. Now, as you just brought up, yesterday we had an 86-yard game from DeAndre Hopkins. Do you think that that sort of production keeps up and we see about half a season worth of Randy Moss production from DeAndre Hopkins moving forward?
It's a ridiculous question that I cannot confidently answer. It's a ridiculous question. I had not looked at the stat lines of Randy Moss throughout that season, and it was the whole season, right? So they even had time. I don't remember when that trade went down, but I think they had some offseason, right?
Yeah,
he
played a full 16-game season.
If you would have told me without having seen the box score, like, so how reasonable is it to compare, to actually compare those two quarterback wide receiver acquisition pairings? I would have said, look, man, I'm over the moon about DeAndre Hopkins, but I think he's probably at a level right now that Randy Moss, not quite at the level that Randy Moss was in 2007, right? This was game two. It was game two. Why? I would say that if I had to give you like the presumed stat line, and maybe Juju coming back, there's an extra couple of targets here and there, but it's not like the Chiefs have so many receivers they can't figure out what to do with all the great ones. If you told me that DeAndre Hopkins averaged 6 catches for 75 yards a game from here on out, very much in that neighborhood, I wouldn't balk at it.
Well, and we know that Travis Kelce's not getting, 16 targets moving forward. So, like, maybe there's actually more. Maybe there's more receptions going to DeAndre Hopkins moving forward.
And Mahomes went to him on that final drive, and they just I don't want to say they misread it. I think Mahomes knew what he saw, and Hopkins did not do exactly what Mahomes expected there. That was their only missed connection. But you're right. 16 targets and freaking 14 catches for Travis Kelce is nonsense. There's plenty of ball to go around there. I thought I was optimistic about DeAndre Hopkins, the moment of the trade. I thought I was being optimistic from that point forward. And then I thought I was being optimistic after seeing the first game. Now after this one, I am wondering if my optimism has any bounds whatsoever because of that point. Because you know what? Comparing him, a guy who, by the way, the best quarterback he played with was when Deshaun Watson was good and Kyler Murray. I'll have to pull it up for next segment. Some hilarious quarterbacks that he caught touchdown passes from and went to Pro Bowls with them as his quarterback. They did not accompany him. I don't believe TJ Yates ever finished that run. But the other amazing thing about that question and the Moss comparison and everything else that it encapsulates, the Chiefs have two legitimate, cannot ignore, cannot overlook zone killers, man beaters when necessary. Hopkins, you know, is still able to do that because of his size and the way he runs his routes, and Kelce route running based as well. They have two legitimate options in the passing game for the greatest quarterback of all time to work with, while this running back continues to defy age and gravity and reason and gets close to these 30 carry games where he goes over 100 and then walks it off at the end. It's an amazing thing. And it just so happens that the two pass catchers leading this team are 67 years old combined. 32 and 35. Math is hard. 67 years of life between the two guys that combined for 22 catches, 186 yards, and 2 touchdowns, leading the Chiefs last night, catching the football from Patrick Mahomes. It's a hilarious time to be a Chiefs fan. It's a hilarious time to talk about this team. We'll continue doing it as we roll on the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. Welcome to the DeAndre Hopkins Show featuring Josh Briscoe. I'm Josh Briscoe. It's not called the DeAndre Hopkins Show. That is not legally binding. That is a joke. I am Josh Briscoe, though. Quentin Morris on the other side of the glass. I'll get to the cornerback thing in a little bit. Plus, Tucker D. Franklin will join us at 8 o'clock tonight to talk about a whole bunch of Chiefs things and a special experience that he had recently. He's the president of Power Rankings for a reason. We will power rank, or at least he will power rank something. I've prepared no power rankings of my own tonight. I know that's alarming for those of you who may be familiar with Tucker's work, but he will power rank some things, and we will maybe we'll figure out a Chiefs-based power ranking. We'll figure out, but Tucker will join us at 8. In the meantime, somebody had written a story here about, you know, Mahomes throwing his first touchdown to Hopkins, and a few of the quarterbacks who have thrown touchdown passes to him. So Mahomes is now the 14th quarterback to throw a touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins. Some of them, you know, you've seen in recent Titans history. The overall list, though, dating back to the Texans days, is absolutely jarring. The high water mark for Hopkins has been, again, good Deshaun Watson and Kyler Murray. Could I interest you in Brandon Whedon, Tom Savage, Brock Osweiler, or TJ Yates?
Aren't half those guys on the endless Cleveland Browns quarterback jersey?
They 100%. The 45 names on the back of one, I think, original maybe Tim Couch jersey, something. There are a lot of failed Browns quarterbacks there. The first year that DeAndre Hopkins went to the Pro Bowl, his quarterbacks were Brian Hoyer, TJ Yates, Brandon Whedon, and Ryan Mallett. That was in 2015. He went to a Pro Bowl. He went to the Pro Bowl again in 2017. That was, you know, obviously the draft class that included Deshaun Watson. So he was in there for 6 of those games alongside TJ Yates and Tom Savage. Taylor Heinicke was on that team. Who knew? He only threw one pass, 10-yard completion. I love Pro Football Reference. It very rarely fails you if you have an interest in simply remembering some guys. The two players who threw passes for the 2018 Houston Texans were Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, 0-for-1.
What a rabbit hole you can go down just by going through, especially if you're into baseball. You know, you get the baseball side of it. Woo! You can spend. I spent a lot of hours going down that rabbit hole. I'm not gonna lie.
It's an incredible free resource. Shout out to the reference family of sites. When did Chris Streveler throw 16 passes for the Arizona Cardinals?
That's a fake name.
It seems like one. He didn't start any. Was that a trick shot guy? Was that a little Taysom Hill action? Anyway, none of that is important, but it is distracting to that point. It makes a lot of sense. If you saw Hopkins talk after the game on the field, it makes a lot of sense. And our collective friend Nate Taylor just made this point on Only Weird Games a few hours ago. It makes sense that DeAndre Hopkins, in that environment, Nate compared the current Arrowhead atmosphere to, like, this may go over poorly for some people for reasons that will become immediately obvious, but it started to gain a little bit of that 90s, early 2000s Yankee Stadium kind of feelings, where this was Nate's take, and I think it's a good one, where the import of the games that are played there starts to seep into the concrete, not concrete cancer, totally different thing. But you begin to, Arrowhead's always been loud and great, right? There's never been a moment in our collective lives, I guess maybe a couple of moments when it wasn't as loud or as great. But by and large, even in the doldrum days, Arrowhead Stadium always been loud, great place to watch a football game, and iconic in its way. But they've hosted the AFC Championship game, it feels like, every year, obviously, not last year. But you host all those AFC Championship games. Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback who plays there. Travis Kelce is the tight end who plays there. You had your Tyreek Hill moments, but then they trade him away and they continue ticking. When Joshua Uche comes to town, he talks about, like, Steve Spagnuolo as the legend of NFL defenses. And he's right. That's the guy that got coached by Bill Belichick. DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, there are heights he hasn't reached. Here's another crazy thing I saw on Football Reference earlier today. DeAndre Hopkins, not a wide receiver stat, but DeAndre Hopkins has a losing record as a football player. Isn't that messed up? That doesn't feel right. One of the definitive receivers of this generation, one of the most fun players, one of the most iconic, recognizable wide receivers, who doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't drop passes. He's not a knucklehead. There's nothing you can take away from DeAndre Hopkins. He's overachieved his own physical skill set. I can't remember the exact number now, but he was 10 games under 500 when he got to Kansas City. He's still under 500 now. That is an unbelievable generational player who's played a lot of losing football. And so when you get him, even Monday night against the Buccaneers, good enough for me. You get him in Arrowhead catching two touchdowns and breathing a new life into what this offense has been struggling around. I don't want to say they've been swirling the drain because that's overstating it. They've been pretty good and very effective and very efficient. It's been turnovers in the red zone. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But it is an offense that hadn't quite found its footing and hadn't quite found the guy who's not Travis Kelce. Hopkins steps in, immediately solves that problem, is overcome by the emotion in those post-game moments. And he's tweeting about Tom Brady and Randy Moss the next morning. There should be no surprise as to how he got there. He's one of the best receivers of this generation, and he has a losing record. All of a sudden, he has by far the best quarterback he's ever played with. He has by far the best surrounding circumstance, offensive coach, championship aspirations he's ever seen. And it all comes together in this perfect synchronicity of a team that desperately needed him to be more than he had been for a while. Not that he'd, you know, fallen off in Tennessee. He's been pretty forgettable there. He said when he got here, his introductory press conference, see, he hadn't played meaningful football, is the exact words, meaningful football in quite a while. And then he gauged it back to when the Cardinals, I think, started 8-0. And they felt like that was meaningful football. And then the fact that they didn't go 9-0 makes me think that that's where the fall-off began. This is a totally different animal for him, and it's a totally different animal for Mahomes and for this offense. Here's the one other thing on Hopkins, and then we'll take a break and pivot to the corners. When we've talked about fits for Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in this offense, 5'10", 4'4", 40, hopefully a little thicker than you'd think, but really it's shorter guys with speed. And I understand why Andy Reid can scheme you open with speed. The route combinations can begin to put stress defenders in these stress positions, and you just fast your way into space. Not starve yourself, just speed. You get enough of those guys, you can do a ton of things, and speed does kill. Like, that is not overstated. It doesn't only apply to what speed do in baseball. You give me a choice of any one trait in the NFL, I can't know anything else for a player, I'll probably go ahead and start with elite speed and then hope the rest of it comes together. It's an overwhelming trait. It's why I'm bullish on Xavier Worthy. It's why I wasn't surprised when they drafted Xavier Worthy. He checks those boxes. But I think somewhere in there, all of us overthought it a little bit, myself included. Andy Reid, when they acquired Hopkins, I thought had a very good line when he said that he's seen so much football, he's played so much football, he's learning a new dialect more than he's learning a new language. We frequently talk about, you know, Juju coming back, he knows the language. Could they have tried to trade for DeMarcus Robinson? He'd know the language. Obviously, that didn't happen. Mecole Hardman comes back midseason, he knows the offense, he knows the language. The awesome thing for me yesterday was watching Mahomes and Hopkins get on that same page together, become such integral pairings for making this offense spin. He was third in receiving snaps, by the way, behind Watson and Worthy. That will continue to grow. His chemistry with Mahomes will continue to grow. I thought this would work when they made the trade. I really did. I thought it would be a clear net positive and would probably be a real positive. And even now I'm thinking, man, we really should have thought this more freely and maybe had this conversation years prior. Get Patrick Mahomes a professional wide receiver with a special skill set in a few different places who knows what he's looking at. Again, a professional wide receiver. Mahomes isn't gun shy on trust. He's just had guys burn him in that regard. Xavier Worthy hasn't really earned Patrick Mahomes' trust at this point, unfortunately. They need to continue working on it. Hopkins showed up, was DeAndre bleeping Hopkins, and earned Patrick Mahomes' trust just that easily. It's a great sign for things to come. But if all he does is put up 8 for 80 and 2 touchdowns, if yesterday was the high watermark for DeAndre Hopkins, I'll take that too. The offense is in a much better place than I thought it would be just 2 weeks into this experiment. I'm deeply excited about the specific Hopkins-Kelsey duo. If Hollywood does come back for the playoff run, you do expect Juju back sometime soon. You do expect Isaiah Pacheco back late November, early December. It's kind of fun for the first time this season, even though they're 8-0, undefeated, top of the league. It's kind of fun to look ahead regarding the Chiefs offense and to be excited about what's still to come, as opposed to looking back and just being bummed by the losses. Also, when your quarterback is Patrick Mahomes, you should never really be that bummed. All right, you complainers. Let's talk about what the Chiefs didn't do today. God. It's the Josh Briscoe Show. I'm sorry for calling you names. You know who would never call you names? Quentin Morris on the other side of the glass. Trade deadline comes and goes today, and the Chiefs do not trade for Marshawn Lattimore. Do they even want to win? This is the question that was being asked throughout my mentions. It was very confusing. At JB Briscoe, by the way, on Twitter and all social media platforms, just because I don't know about Twitter. It's been rough for a little bit. We'll see where it goes. At JB Briscoe, no E, by the way, on Briscoe, if you're looking for me. Just ends with the O. That's it. No E. Don't ever make that mistake, or I will call my people. It's just me. So the New Orleans Saints did trade away Marshawn Lattimore, and there was a lot of reporting around that throughout the last couple of days, and some reporting that the Chiefs were interested. I believe the Chiefs were interested. I think I said this to Carrington last week in particular. I don't believe the Chiefs were ever interested at the cost of a day two draft pick, which would be second round or third round. Maybe you could talk yourself into, oh, we're going to have probably the last pick of the third round, so that third round pick, we'll have the Titans pick. Never made sense for me for the Chiefs to give up the pick they received in trading L'Jarius Sneed to go get another cornerback. Marshawn Lattimore is older than L'Jarius Sneed, and L'Jarius Sneed was perfect in this defense. Lattimore has a little flexibility in his contract. Obviously, Sneed got paid right away. But comparing those two, for me, is just like about, it's about investment in the position outside of Trent McDuffie. Didn't think it made sense. I'm sure the Chiefs called and said, hey, if the best you're hearing is maybe even at a fourth, we could part ways with a fourth to have him the rest of the season, tinker that contract a little bit and figure it out. But the price got too high too fast, and ultimately, the Saints sent Lattimore and a fifth the Washington Commanders in exchange for a third, fourth, and sixth in next year's draft. The Chiefs were never going to pay that price. They should never have paid that price. The reporting at the time, I thought, was starting to give the game away a little bit, where before the deal was done, and while it was also very open, Adam Schefter says the Chiefs have been linked to Lattimore. Ian Rappaport says the Chiefs have been in it. They're going past tense in the moment, right? The Saints are hoping to get the bidding back up, get some other teams involved, say, hey, you know, the Commanders are the favorite, but the Chiefs, those champions have been sniffing around. And maybe your team, maybe you, Baltimore, do you want to give us a call? Cincy, your defense is terrible. Would you like Marshawn Lattimore? Give us a call and we'll talk about it. If you don't, maybe the Chiefs will get him. That always felt relatively transparent to me once the price became evidently too high for the Chiefs to meet. And I think they made the right decision by not doing that. In the way that I've talked about Hopkins and Uche being reasonable costs to give up for players who you think you can get a real championship push out of, didn't make sense for me with Lattimore. Here's the thing that's confusing. There have been a number of people on social media who have responded to that general line of thinking with great vitriol and concern. See, if they stay with the in-house options, this season is sabotaged. It's a verbatim word choice that I'm pulling from Twitter. I think Tampa's garbage wide receivers torched the Chiefs last night. Can I help you all with something just to maybe ease your nerves about football? Cade Otton was a menace, 8 for 77. Next leading receiver for the Bucs and the leading wide receiver, Sterling Shepard, 4 for 48. Their entire wide receiving core was somewhere in the 80, under 90 yards, I think, on the day. Should have done that math before the show. You know how I do with math.
Didn't it take until the very last drive to get over two catches for the wide receivers?
That would make a lot of sense. I don't know that, but I would believe you if that's what you thought you heard. Baker Mayfield ended with 200 passing yards, even on the dot. A lot of those schemed open plays, too, were schemed open. Liam Cohen had a very good day, which meant Steve Spagnuolo did not have as good of a day as usual. Not really concerned about that in the long term, but you can acknowledge it for one game. Guys got open. There were some good matchups. And yes, it's true. Late in the game, Baker was looking for Chris Roland Wallace and Joshua Williams because throwing at Trent McDuffie is a fool's errand. We all know this already. Here's what I want to say about the corners, okay? If staying with this group they have now is the same group of guys they had coming into this year minus Jalen Watson. I don't think they expected Jalen Watson to start. Like, he certainly wasn't, let's say this, he was not an incumbent in the space of L'Jarius Sneed. He had off-season shoulder surgery. He barely participated in training camp. He had to go to the yellow jersey to kind of ramp up to contact. He was out there in the third preseason game into the fourth quarter and was getting beaten. Now, he was knocking off the rust. We know this now. But after that, Watson settled in as this team's clear number two corner and played like a high-end number two outside corner. A great start to the season. Horrible that he had that injury. And he seemed to contend on Twitter today that maybe he's still eyeing a return for the playoffs. That would be a blessing. But I think there's some panic around the Chiefs' corners right now that is not earned. They traded Sneed away and prepared to just weather this storm with the numbers they threw at it. Now Watson was the winner of that group, and you lost the winner of that group. Again, that's bad. It is a weakness. It's where quarterbacks should be looking at. One of Jalen Watson's biggest advantages through this season was that he was not a weakness that quarterbacks could target opposite McDuffie. Chris Roland Wallace has played a nice 69 defensive snaps of NFL football. Nazi Johnson, who obviously didn't play last night because of the concussion, he's played very, very, very little since tearing his ACL. Didn't play at all last year. He's played a little bit this year, kind of ramping up. Joshua Williams was playing. He played in week one a decent amount, week two a tiny bit. He did not play from week three until the injury started. Now he's ramping back up. He played 100% of the snaps yesterday. I think by and large, you just let this one play out, noting that Lattimore was the only real, like, huge upgrade available. If there was a guy they thought they could get and plug in as a veteran kind of floor setter for a sixth, I would have been totally fine with having that conversation. Here's the thing I'm surprised I haven't heard more of. Somebody responded to one of those tweets of mine and said, apart from all of this, I'll go ahead and thank you, Bonk Humphrey, for the tweet. I have full faith that Spagnuolo and Merritt will have the unit playing well. If there's any position they've been solid at finding guys and helping them succeed, it's corner. That's the part of this I'm surprised I haven't heard more of. Leaning on the idea that all the coaches will, they'll develop the in-house guys. Don't worry about it. Coaches will make these okay players great players. That's usually a bad strategy that ultimately bites you. Over-trusting your own talent, over-trusting your own coaching, that is usually a bad strategy. It's not usually Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Merritt developing a cornerback. That's earned. They've done it over and over and over. We have seen it over and over and over. Steve Spagnuolo said last week, certainly true for Joshua Williams, and then he said it's probably true for everybody on the roster, they play better when they get those starter reps in practice that week. Nazi Johnson was the starter for 18 snaps before his concussion. Nazi Johnson had played in 7 games the last 2 years. Chris Roland Wallace is a rookie who hasn't played 70 snaps yet. Now, again, you can absolutely be worried about Joshua Williams as CB2. Johnson should be back. Hopefully he and Nazi Johnson was not playing exceptional football. It was a real loss to lose Jalen Watson. But I think talking about the cornerback group in a similar way to the way we were talking about the wide receivers was a mistake. I think we should talk about it the way we're talking about the defensive line. Joshua Uche becomes available for a future sixth, right? He becomes open and available for that price tag. Bring him in, spruce up the group, and see if he can give you a little extra pass rush juice, which, by the way, will make the corners' lives easier later in the season. The Chiefs didn't get a deal at corner. There was not one available, to my best understanding. And so, again, on Watson, it was like it was around his 40th NFL game when it was like, oh, that's a number two corner. That's a legit number two cornerback there with significant NFL experience now. I generally, this might put me on opposition of other people here, I generally kind of cringe at the in vitro we trust mindset taking over everything. On some level, it's certainly he's earned it, and if you've got it on a t-shirt or whatever, that's fine. But when your response to serious critique is, well, it's Brett Veach, he'll figure it out. Brett Veach can make mistakes too. He has made mistakes too. Bad uses of draft picks, leaning on players, believing in wide receivers that never developed into number one or number two receivers. Again, this isn't really about Veach. Brett Veach has earned a ton of trust, but I don't like, oh, that man is flawless. We will follow him to the ends of the earth and everything he says will be fine forever. That's how you eventually end up with a roster with holes in it because even the person in question doesn't know how to recalibrate to their own mistakes. Again, that's not Brett Veach. Brett Veach is in an incredible spot right now. He has earned a ton of your trust. But I think it's bizarre that Veach, Spags, and Merritt, a triumvirate there who has proven time and time again that they do deserve the trust in that process, that they are now not getting it after a day that Sterling Shepard went 4 for 48. That game is different with better receivers. It was not a good day for Joshua Williams. It was not a good day for Chris Rowan Wallace. It really wasn't a good day for Nick Bolton. It wasn't a good day for the linebackers by and large. It wasn't a great day for the safeties. They ended up kind of bouncing back a little bit. But I just have found it strange. There's been such a hyper-focus on Joshua Williams in the cornerback room that's going to get Nazi Johnson back. And then you say, hey, you're going to have to do this on the fly a little bit. There will be growing pains. But if you told me that Chris Rowland Wallace was going to have a pick six in the Super Bowl in a few months, I would not look at you crazy. It's like, ah, that kind of fits this bonkers trend that this defense and these coaches have been able to pull off. So the trade deadline has come and gone. Marshawn Lattimore's in Washington, not Kansas City. I think that's for the best for the Chiefs' future in the long term. It will be a thing to watch. It may cost them points. It almost certainly will cost them points. It may cost them games at some point to say, oh man, Jalen Watson's probably in the right spot and Joshua Williams wasn't. That's an issue. And the Chiefs need to figure out if they can trust Joshua Williams in zone, which so far has been an issue. I just don't think it's quite the mission critical, urgent failure kind of thing that a lot of people have latched onto. So I'm offering a little bit of patience at the cornerback position because I think if anybody has earned that kind of faith, it's the guys in charge of that spot. We'll take a timeout, come back, chat a little more. At 8 o'clock, Tucker D. Franklin will join us. We'll talk about all sorts of Chiefs things. I'll see if he thinks I'm crazy at receiver, corner, or anything else. Plus, I'm going to let the president of Power Rankings do a little bit of Power Rankings. That'll be up at 8 o'clock here on the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. It's the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. A few minutes away from talking ball with Tucker D. Franklin. I've mentioned one player's name a few times that we haven't really talked about a lot, and I just told you that I think the cornerback panic is a little bit overdone right now, and how excited I am about wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, and panic and wide receiver and panic and wide receiver. What is it? Panic and wide receiver. I'm not panicking about Xavier Worthy, okay? I think it's far too soon for that. But it could be going better. Now, I think if Mahomes hits him on that deep shot down the field from a couple of weeks ago, the vibes are very different there. But the first drive yesterday, last night, you get Xavier Worthy absolutely alone, drifting toward the sideline, and it looked like a walk-in touchdown. And then the play ends short of the goal line, and you go, oh man, well, that was like a walk-up to the one sort of reception. And then you see the replay, and as he spins to catch the ball, of course, he steps out of bounds. The running plays didn't work, and that route was obviously a mess. The big loss on that next drive stalled the drive out entirely. The inverse of what I just said about DeAndre Hopkins a little bit ago, he makes everything seem easier. He's a veteran that Mahomes is clearly comfortable relying on just two games into that relationship now. It feels like that chemistry is there and building very, very quickly. can't say any of that about Xavier Worthy at this point. I don't even know if it's concerning. But it is a bummer, right? I still think he's, at least when Juju's still out, he's probably the second most important receiver to have on the field, or at least the second most threatening for opposing defenses. You'd rather see Justin Watson or Mecole Hardman on the field opposite DeAndre Hopkins than you would Xavier Worthy, because you know Worthy has one dominant burner trait. But it sure would be nice to see that connection land. And to see the building blocks of better chemistry there. Because, you know, I guess Mahomes could have scooted that ball to the right just a little bit. But the only defender around Worthy on that play was the sideline, and he stepped right on it. For me, it's a little bit, it's the bummer that comes with realizing that the rookie project is still a rookie project. That the accelerated course isn't quite there like it was for Rashee Rice last year. It would be around the same time. Worthy could have a different role, maybe a more limited role, that is more productive going forward. And I still think we're going to see him have another long touchdown. I think we're going to continue to see him be a part of the offense. And I think that still needs to be the plan, because by January, I don't think we're going to be having the same conversation. Or at least I don't think we are going to be having it on a mandatory level. 2 months from today, we're going to be either right before or right after the last game of the regular season. 2 months from today, I want Xavier Worthy to be a more confident part of this offense. However, the Chiefs need to adjust to that. It would just be nice if there had been a tiny bit more production up to this point. If a few of those connections were made, if it felt like the chemistry was a little bit more there. Again, he's a rookie. It's very, very different than onboarding one of the best receivers of this era. But I'm acknowledging the disappointment. I'm acknowledging that it's a little bit of a bummer. And I'm acknowledging that there's a lot of ways to go still. And that last part can be encouraging. I am in no way out on Xavier Worthy. I just think it's okay to admit that it hasn't been as fun as we've hoped. We'll take a break. It's Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. I think I was a second late on my clock there, but...